Hi, this is Anne Merchant, and welcome to The Sounds of Science, the podcast brought to you by the National Academy of Sciences, the National Academy of Engineering, the Institute of Medicine, and the National Research Council, collectively known as the National Academies. Technology, in the broadest sense, is the modification of the natural world to fulfill human needs and wants. But when you talk about technology, people often focus only on the most recent technological inventions, such as cell phones, the internet, and MP3 players. But technology is far more than computers and electronics. It's airplanes and automobiles, medicines and MRIs, papers and plastics. It's home building, road construction, and the manufacture of everything from turbines to toothbrushes. It's agriculture and electricity. It's books, clothing, furniture, telephones, and television, fast food and home-cooked meals, kids' toys, the space shuttle, roller coasters, and swimming pools. In short, technology is everything that humans do or make to change the natural environment to suit their own purposes. Or, as the International Technology Education Association puts it, technology is the innovation, change, or modification of the natural environment in order to satisfy perceived human wants and needs. This broad concept of technology is widely accepted by experts who think and write about technology, science, and engineering on a regular basis. For example, the American Association for the Advancement of Science provides a sweeping definition. They say, in the broadest sense, technology extends our abilities to change the world, to cut, shape, or put together materials, to move things from one place to another, to reach farther with our hands, voices, and senses. And in the National Academy of Engineering report, Technically Speaking, technology is defined as the process by which humans modify nature to meet their needs and wants. Virtually everyone in a modern society is profoundly influenced by technology. At the behavioral level, Americans have traditionally been early adopters and enthusiastic users of a wide array of technologies, from automobiles and television to air travel and wireless telecommunications. This suggests that they not only recognize the advantages of new technologies, but that they also incorporate them into their lives and benefit from their use. But it's when technology fails us that we come to appreciate just how dependent we are on all our modern conveniences, for our comfort as well as for our survival. In countries like the United States, technology is central to the way people go about their lives, to the health of the economy, and to the national security. Hurricane Katrina's devastating impact on New Orleans provides dramatic evidence of our dependence on technology. Satellite and imaging technologies provided several days' warning that Katrina was headed toward the city, allowing most residents, but not some of the most vulnerable, to flee before the storm made landfall. New Orleans as we know it could not exist without the dams and levees that hold the surrounding waters at bay. And these structural barriers can only work effectively with the mechanical pumps that remove water that seeps into this below-sea-level city. The pumps are operated by electricity, produced in power-generating facilities, and distributed through a network of transmission lines called the grid. When Katrina's hurricane-force winds brought down power lines all over the Gulf Coast, the pumps were no longer available to handle the inflow of water. Cell phones, although they are battery-operated, require cell towers to transmit messages. And these towers are also tied into the grid. Once the power was out, cell phone systems stopped working, leaving authorities and citizens unable to communicate. Because people could no longer call in from outside the area, individuals trapped by rising waters had little idea of the extent of the flooding or the danger that they faced. While other communications technologies like television and radio alerted the rest of the country to the developing disaster, residents were trapped in the thick of things and were left literally in the dark. Without electricity to power freezers and refrigerators, home food supplies as well as grocery store stockpiles were soon spoiled. Katrina's storm surge disrupted the Port of New Orleans, and floodwaters blocked the main roads and rail lines into the shipyards, effectively closing one of the main export routes for American agricultural products. Oil wells off the Louisiana coast were damaged, as were onshore refineries, resulting in immediate shortages of gasoline. This, in turn, caused steep increases in gas prices across the entire country, spreading Katrina's wrath far beyond the confines of New Orleans. It's with the help of technology that the city's infrastructure will be rebuilt. But Katrina and its aftermath remind us that technological literacy is much more than simply being able and willing to use a technology. Indeed, because technology is pervasive in our world, it's vitally important that people understand what technology is, how it works, how it's created, how it shapes society, and what factors influence technological development. The technological choices we make are important in determining our health and economic well-being. It helps us pick the types of jobs and recreation available to us. Even our means of self-expression is dependent upon technology. How well we're prepared to make these choices depends in large part on how technologically literate we are. It's against this background that the question naturally arises about the level of technological literacy in the American public. Most experts who've thought about this issue in depth agree that people in this country are not as technologically literate as they should be. This is simply a general impression, though, because there is little hard data to back it up. Unfortunately, no good measures of technological literacy are being used in the United States today. A small number of organizations and individuals, including some outside this country, have developed a variety of tests and surveys to try to get a handle on what people know or believe about technology. But most of these efforts have either been short-lived or have failed to provide the kind of necessary data for drawing useful conclusions about technological literacy. The lack of information about technological literacy contrasts sharply with the amount of information about literacy in other subject areas. For example, adults' understanding of science has been assessed for almost 3 decades in surveys published biennially in Science and Engineering Indicators from the National Science Board at the National Science Foundation. Scientific knowledge and understanding among K-12 students are evaluated in a variety of standardized tests and by the Federal National Assessment of Educational Progress. In addition, student achievement is regularly tested in other school subjects, such as mathematics, English, and history. So why not test for technological literacy? Part of the answer is historical. Until recently, educators and policymakers didn't consider technology as separate from science. Not only has there been no testing, therefore, for specifics in technological literacy, there hasn't even been a consensus on what constitutes technological literacy. Another part of the answer to this question is that technological literacy is difficult to assess. Technological literacy has 3 basic components or dimensions, each of which presents challenges for assessments. First, a technologically literate person must have a certain amount of basic knowledge about technology. In other words, they need to have an understanding of the concepts of systems, feedback, or trade-offs. Second, a technologically literate person should have some basic technical capabilities, such as being able to work with a computer, or to identify and fix problems in the technological devices that they use at home or in the office. More generally, a person should be able to employ an approach to solving problems that relies on aspects of a design process. This second dimension is particularly difficult to assess because it can't be easily measured in a typical paper and pencil test, especially if that test is in a multiple-choice format. And third, a technologically literate person should be able to think critically about technological issues. So if, for example, a community is faced with the prospect of a new coal-fired plant, its citizens should be properly equipped to make a decision on whether to support or oppose the construction. The impetus for technological literacy is a desire that all citizens be empowered to function confidently and productively in our technology-dependent society. A technologically literate public could engage in more informed public dialogue on the pros and cons of technology-related developments. They'd provide a pool of talent for technologically educated workers, and they'd contribute to the national science and engineering enterprise. If we could assess technological knowledge, capability, and thinking skills in a rigorous and systematic way, we could track trends among students, teachers, and out-of-school adults. But because we don't currently have good ways to measure technological literacy, our policymakers and educators are essentially flying blind. Reliable information would enable policymakers, educators, the business community, and others to take steps to improve the situation if necessary. As a result, movement toward a technologically literate society would be directed and purposeful, governed by data rather than by anecdotal evidence and educated guesses. Over a period of many years, with considerable investment of human and financial resources, the benefits of technological literacy would be realized. The Committee on Assessing Technological Literacy was chaired by Elsa Garmeyer from Dartmouth College in Hanover, New Hampshire. For more information on TechTally, you may contact the National Academies Press, toll-free at 1-800-624-6242. My name is Anne Merchant, and you've been listening to The Sounds of Science, the podcast brought to you by the National Academies, advisors to the nation on science, engineering, and medicine. Be sure to visit us at our website at nationalacademies.org, where we have more than 3,000 books and publications available full text to read free online.